How happy are you about Sadiq and his knighthood? Come on.
I actually can't believe it.
Knife point robbery is 36% up. 22 in London every year. One great every hour. 320 young black people have lost their lives to knife crime since 2016. 143 phones are stolen in London every day. And the man is getting knighthood. Welcome to the Fox and Father Christmas special. With me, the Fox, and him,
the Father.
This week, we're going to be really happy because it's Christmas.
It's not Christmas.
Well, it's nearly Christmas.
It's Advent.
Oh, goodness me. Why? We were trying to get off to an upbeat, positive start. And I there mean, you are.
The world gets confused. It hits the 1st of December and everyone's like, yeah, it's Christmas. Then you spend an entire month celebrating Christmas. Then it gets to actual Christmas and people go, oh, this is boring. There's this weird bit between Christmas and New Year. What do we do? Like, no, that's when Christmas is. Advent is the lead up to Christmas. It can be penitential, it can be solemn, but it can also be joyful in anticipating the nativity, the arrival of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, the Christ child. But it isn't Christmas yet. Christmas Eve into Christmas Day when we celebrate Christmas. And then there's the 12 days of Christmas. We have 12 days of feasting. And then, of course, we're into Epiphany. And so some people celebrate Christmas all the way up until Candlemas on the 2nd of February, which is, you get a whole period of Christmas. So December isn't Christmas yet, but there we go.
Are you a priest or something? What's going on? I just want to have a normal chat.
I try not to be pedantic about this, but it's nice that people recognize Christ and the Christ child anyway, but then they get a bit weird in the bit that it is Christmas. So it's kind of, you have to do a bit of education.
So can I ask you a question about Christmas then?
Of course, come.
Is there, in the Christian faith, is it like, is it happy? Or did they know, because like the prophets and stuff, did they say like, he's going to come, but he's going to die? So what was it, is it a period? Is it a period of trepidation, or is it a period of joy and trepidation, or is it a period of joy?
Oh, no, Christmas is incredibly joyful. The only time more joyful than Christmas is Easter on the resurrection. But yeah, Christmas is the most, other than that, the most joyful time of the year. It's the Messiah was finally here. It's great.
Well, look, man, I'd love to talk about God all week, but I've got more important things to talk about.
Oh, yeah?
Let's talk. Yeah, tea.
Okay,
I was online today in between bouts of stabbing myself in the eye with a piece of chicken wire, which has not been good.
You should, I mean, on the one hand, it's great that you're doing like manual labor stuff now, but on the other hand, you really shouldn't be trusted on your own to do this kind of stuff.
Dude, I literally have in the corner of my eye, a big red bloody thing, which is going to get more bloody, and I can barely blink, and I've definitely done something to my eye. Which isn't good, but there's something like this about me. And also it is good that I do that. It's good to be outside all day, and I haven't stopped from the minute I woke up to the minute I sat down here with you, which is going to be my relaxing happy session. So, but I did notice when I was sort of in between weights of extremely mobile, hard labor and exercise that you had started a war.
I've launched my crusade. But it's not the crusade people thought. You know, last night, it's funny, because of the time zone difference, it's hilarious. I tweet something at night, then I go to bed, and I wake up, and all this stuff's happened in between. I don't understand this thing about water.
Like, okay, water. So can we provide some context for people?
Please.
So, Calvin started talking about the fact you can't get a decent cup of tea in America. I mean, you know, it's a bit... It's a bit edgy, Calv.
Is it?
Yeah. And then people started telling you how they prepared their own tea in America. And it involved some very strange things. It came from a thing of people not owning kettles. So can you explain to us why people don't own kettles in America?
Yeah, so I put out the tweet saying, I've realized why you can't get a good cup of tea in America. And it's because kettles don't boil here, right? So the voltage on their electric... on the slots on the wall is 110 to 120 volts. Now, in the UK, it's double that, right? So, but people keep saying, no, it's not the voltage, it's the wattage, or it's the amperage, and whatever it is, right? The electricity over here is half of what we have in the UK. And so I actually own an electric kettle out here, but it takes at least 5 minutes to boil. And it's-
can I just stop you there?
Yeah.
How quickly does an iPhone charge?
iPhone charges quite fast, but then I suppose-
So when you're asking to apply heat to water.
I wouldn't be able to compare because I leave my phone on charge overnight. So I won't be able to compare like if it charges faster in the UK or not. But I can compare kettles because I spend a lifetime boiling tea, right? Boiling water for tea. You pop the kettle on during the ad break and then you make a cup of tea. You sit down, you watch the rest of your show. That's traditionally what we do in England. You can't do that in America. Like I literally have to put the kettle on, go and get showered, brush my teeth, come out, and then the kettle's just about finished. And then I can make the coffee or tea or whatever I'm going to make for the morning.
And so did you see that thing I sent you from Saturday Night Live, which was actually the funniest bit of Saturday Night Live in ages, which I've been mocking you about? Do you regret now the fact that you've embraced the temperature system in America? Do you want to repent?
You know what? I drink more coffee here. I drink less tea, but I love a good cup of tea, especially at the start and the end of the day. It's like, you can't live without tea, but people have been tweeting me things. So they say, well, we boil our water in the microwave. Now that almost made me want to pack my bags and get straight on a plane. That's sacrilege. Boiling water in a microwave. One chap even said he puts I can't repeat this.
Styrofoam cup. I read it.
I bet you were sick, right? I bet you were sick.
Well, I was just like, because of Lizzie and her, the fact that she's like, you know, it's like I've got a headache and she's like out in the garden picking weeds and turning them into tea because she's one of those weirdos. Like the thought, I couldn't show her the tweet. I thought she might have passed away. Yeah. The idea of like plasticky styrofoamy stuff with microwaves going through it into water. Mm. I mean, would you be better off like snorting a line of Chernobyl?
Health-wise, probably.
Yeah. So carry on the story. People were very, very upset with you for the fact that you were criticizing America for not knowing how to create a kettle.
Someone's put a community note saying the kettle was actually invented in the United States. Like it might have been invented in the United States. I don't know if it was or wasn't, but they're not very good here. They don't work here. So what I'm going to get is one of those stove ones that, you know, you see in all the American pop it on the gas stove and then it boils and it whistles. Fine. But I think...
Have you got gas where you are?
Yeah.
And how's the
lesbian
car? You're
not allowed gas out here. You're not allowed gas in the UK anymore, are you?
Well, we've got oil here, and right. it's getting filled up again soon before Christmas. So we run off oil, which means that we run off... I mean, if I had an Arga, which I don't, because I don't really like Arga. So
you used to have an Arga.
Yeah, but it was an electric Arga, and it was a nightmare. Oil-fired Argas are good.
Some of the things people have been saying, like not only do they microwave their water, they keep the water warm on one. Well, there's, you know, there's coffee burners, so that you can turn up and use the warm water to make tea. What? Then there's that thing with what's her name? I love her, actress. Was in Downton Abbey, Lady Violet.
Baby Business. Sorry, I'm not. I don't know about that.
Dame. Name a couple of dames.
Dame Judy Dench.
No, not Judy Dench, the other one.
No, the other one. Dame.
Anyway.
This is
just awful content. We can't even think of a name. But she made this video saying, look, every time I come to America, they give me a cup full of tepid water and a tea bag on the side. You can't make tea with that. Tea is a herb. You need to bring it back to life in boiling hot water or close to boiling hot water. And like, just the whole tea culture is foreign. And I think it's because... They threw all their tea in the harbour as a rejection of Britain. And so since that point, they've kind of just said, we're not going to bother with it.
Are you willing to go to the Lipton tea factory and self-immolate outside?
Right, so Lipton's is not tea, first and foremost. And this is the other thing. Oh, so,
God. Dude, you're alienating everyone with this conversation. I'm trying to be nice to you.
You know, I love this.
Give you a way out.
Don't get tea. So they keep saying, well, what about sweet tea? I'm like, sweet tea is, I love sweet tea, right? It's basically diabetes in a glass, but it's not tea. Yes. It's iced tea. It's sweet tea. It's something else. It's like a soft drink, but it's not in the place of a cup of tea. Like a cup of tea is a sophisticated part of our culture. It's a sign of civilization, right? It's very different to a cup of iced sugar.
Do you take, how do you take your tea?
I like an Earl Grey, black, or sometimes with a dash of milk. Yeah, just standard. But I mean, right, so I'm going to make a video of this because you get you boil your water, you get your teapot, you put some hot water in the teapot to warm it up first, empty that out, you put your leaves in there in the teapot, you put your hot water in the teapot, you leave it to stew or to steep or to brew or whatever, and then you come back in 2.5 to 3 minutes later and you pour your tea. But this is an art. And I want to put this out because one of our American friends moved to Britain and he's obsessed with tea. He's got more teapots than I've ever seen in my life, but he still doesn't get it because he calculates.
Are you talking about the Vietnamese boat person?
I am, because he calculates exactly like 2 minutes, 45 seconds. The tea is like tea is not a science. Tea is an art. And if you're doing it to the exact millisecond, you're not getting it.
Well, I just hope that, you know, you're not, what was it called when they
you don't add cream to tea? You can add a bit of milk if you like. You can add a bit of sugar. You don't add cream to tea.
My mum used to have black tea always. That's how she had it, and yeah. She was rare for doing that. And she used to frown at people who had sugar in their tea or milk in their tea. She used to think it was strange.
Well, I mean, some of it's a class thing, right? You know, Builder's Brew is a very thick tea with lots of sugar to keep them going throughout the day or whatever, and the only reason we ever added milk to tea was because we had fine china and we didn't want it to crack. So we cooled it down, cooled the cup down a bit by putting milk in first, which is why milk should traditionally be in first, not after. But these days.
Is that why?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You learn something new every day with you.
I mean,
but, how are we going to, you know, solve the schism between you and America, well, having been so engaging with their Fahrenheit? Yeah. Idea.
So I've realized that I've come here to finish the job. We kind of colonized these lands, but we didn't finish the job. So I'm here to, as a settler, to say, look, let me teach you guys how to do tea.
I think this is a hill to die on. Out of all of the hills, yeah. I think this hill to die on. Now we've dealt with all the serious, low, you know, like the depressing stuff. Let's get on to some cheerful stuff. I'm going to have a quick look at what it was because I can only read with one eye. Oh.
Yeah.
How happy are you about Sadiq and his knighthood? Come on.
I actually can't believe it. I can't believe that Sadiq Khan, of all people, is getting knighted. Since 2016, so this is his third term. By the way, there should be term limits on Mayor of London. I understand they can only sit for 4 years at a time, but they can get elected as many times as they like. That's wrong.
Yeah.
Because we're never going to get rid of him otherwise.
We're never going to get rid of him because he's a Mohammedan.
Oh, okay. Well, that's controversial, Lawrence. So I don't
well,
since 2016, crime is up in London almost 20%. So record crime, violent crime, knife crime, even gun crime. There aren't even any guns in the UK, but somehow that's risen in London.
Knife crime robberies, 36% up.
Yep.
22 in London every year, one great every hour. 320 young black people have lost their lives to knife crime since 2016. 143 phones are stolen in London every day, and the man is getting knighthood.
Like, why are we done for destroying our capital city?
What? So, let's link this in. Did you see Welby's House of Lords thing?
No.
Yeah. Oh God. Let's play that quickly because it's like you know. Let's talk about failing or falling or whatever the word is upwards. Okay. So, right, here, I'm going to play this. If Theon could put it out, then it's 2 minutes, but we only need to play the first 20 seconds because he's such an irritating person.
My lords, it is often said, and it is a cliche to say it, but hey, I'm the Archbishop still, that if you want to make God laugh, make plans. Well, on that basis, next year I will be causing God more hilarity than anyone else for many years because the plans for next year were very detailed and extensive. If you pity anyone, pity my poor diary secretary who's seen weeks and months of work disappear in a puff of a resignation announcement.
Sorry, can't listen to any more of that.
Resigned.
Why do these people feel so sorry for themselves? Like they're being martyred. So we're celebrating we're going to give Sadiq Khan a knighthood. I mean, in a way, actually, a knighthood's not a bad thing because it means that he may not run for the Labour leadership, which would be a catastrophic thing. Well, you know, you get the feeling that once you know, those people love money. And when I say those people, I don't mean Asians. I mean people like Sadiq Khan. I know, but I'm getting grid-sized all over the shop today because I was talking about what's his name? Narc Gwehi, who was the guy who put I Love Jesus on his rainbow armband, the footballer. And I was like, make him England captain. He's an inspiring dude. He's got integrity, passion, honesty, and you know, love of God. We might win something with him in charge. And everyone just turns around. I get two responses from my... I mean, I've started to read my responses now. It's a terrible thing. I get two responses from... One is like, oh, you're just trying to play to the black crowd. Oh. I'm like, oh, I hadn't even noticed that he was black. I was just happy he was a Christian. And then the other one is like, it's got to go to an Englishman. All right. Well, he's playing for England, so he is Englishman.
Right. So and you can argue whether the England team should be predominantly English. That's a fair argument. But if he's already on the England team, then there's no problem with him being the captain of the team.
Yeah. I mean, the guy is English. But so why would someone like Mark Gwehi, so you got a Muslim who refuses to wear the trans stuff, the Manchester United Moroccan or Algerian defender, he's sitting there going, I'm not wearing this pride shite. And then it's like, well, yes, okay, sanctified class, that's totally fine, don't worry about it. And then a Christian does it and it's like, yeah, get him, burn the witch. And then you've got Sadiq Khan getting rewarded for being crap at his job. Justin Welby going, oh, it's so terrible, it's awful, you know, I had such a busy year planned next year to, you know, force clergymen to shut churches and to tell them that Jesus would get the vaccine. Where's the, like, the moral, oh, my mum hated that word, but where's the foundation stone of what is and isn't real? That's what I want to know, because Sadiq Khan's obviously a failure, he's a proven failure. Welby is a proven failure. Gwehi's just going, you know, you're going to force me to wear the armband. I'll wear it, but I'll go, I love Jesus. And it's like, what's wrong with that? I don't understand. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, I celebrated when he said, when he put I love Jesus on there, and he obviously got penalized for it. I was like, brave chap. But then I heard about the Mohammedan who just refused to wear it. I was like, actually, yeah, that's the better stance. The Christians should say, no, I'm not going to wear this. Not that I'm going to wear your gay armband and write Jesus over the top. Just refuse to wear it. And actually, the consequences are better for you that way anyway.
And Matt Lucas then was like, I've been racially, homophobic abuse as a football fan. And it's like, okay, mate. Well, he's put down some things. I'm sure he has been homophobically abused. He's a famous gay person, you know, and you're going to get abuse, especially if you victimize yourself for doing it. But the idea that I mean, I almost wanted to respond to Matt Lucas, and because I have had a back and forth with him over the years, and just says to him, look, you'll disagree with me on this, I imagine, but I have some sympathy for the fact that, you know, if you were a gay person back in the day, it was hard to find a place where you weren't going to get like beaten up for being gay. So the rainbow, well, yeah, there was.
So there's always been. I don't mind this whole victim. In fact, my Fox and Father follows this week is going to be Larry Taunton, because he owned you on that. He's like, look, you've been in Hollywood too long. It's gay. I'm an alpha male. This is the way it should be.
I have to say, the thing I admire most about anybody is the courage of their convictions. Like, that's the thing I admire more than anything. Even if their convictions are completely wrong, right. I have a begrudging admiration for Marina Perkis. She's wrong about everything, but she's absolutely convicted about being wrong about everything. Sorry, you've taken me off track now. What was I trying to say? The gays, yeah. So I was trying to say to him, I was going to go, but, you know, your little rainbow flag, which was like, you know, there's a rainbow flag in the window, you don't get beaten up in this pub. they're not talking about Soho. I'm talking about other parts of England. And I sort of have some sympathy for that. But I did want to say to him that you're very happy. All of the football clubs are doing it as well, are going LGBTQ+IA. And do you think they know what they're supporting, or do you just think it's just a pointless virtue signal?
I don't understand why they're doing it. I thought they'd move past all this. They did the taking of the knee for the BLM, and then that didn't work out, and people protested. And I thought they'd move past all the virtue signaling, and now they've gone backwards to doing it for the LGBTQ+IA or whatever community. Like, why?
But do they know what the thing after LGB? I know that you don't even agree with the LGB part of it, but for you know your average sort of
TQIAA+
Hollywood liberal, or you know, not Hollywood liberal. I'd call myself like a Borehamwood liberal, because that's about as close to Hollywood as I got. You would say that the LGB thing, yeah, I can deal with, but the TQIA stuff, that's properly poisonous. So why are football clubs, where it is basically the opportunity for men to go out there and just go, yeah, and cheer at something, why would they embrace this ideology, do you think? Is that, do you think it comes from diversity and inclusion within the management of the FA? Do you think it comes down from on high? Or do you think there are activists?
The gain down of one of the last areas of masculinity in the country.
Okay. So it's an attack on men.
Yeah. It's an attack on
straight men.
On masculinity, on normativity. It's undermining all of that, isn't it? Where's the last place you can be a bloke in the UK? In a football match. And so what are they doing football now? Making it gay.
I'd say in the bedroom myself, but there we are. And as a parent, but you know, obviously the state does that as well nowadays. It is strange. So if you were Archbishop of Canterbury, which you should be, you'd be great. You'd be a fan. You would literally be the best Archbishop of Canterbury this country could ever have. Who would hate you?
Who would hate you?
No, the entire establishment. Can you imagine having to turn up at Parliament and go to these horrible dinners with these horrible people who just want to be patted on the back for being woke? And I'd be like, sort your lives out, stop doing this, repent, follow Christ.
But it's very anti-doctrinal. Wokeism is very anti-Christian. I don't understand how Christians think that the diversity and inclusion mantra is helpful to them in any way. Well, I don't understand why Welby thinks that, oh, this will get me some more followers. I mean, who's he trying to talk to? He's certainly not talking to his sort of middle-aged, middle-class women of a certain age congregation, is he? He's talking to someone else. Maybe he's talking to the Jaguar crowd, you know, the non-binary pink car crowd. I don't know. Here's a question. So are we being lied to on such an enormous scale that a car company like Jaguar, or a Church of England like the Church of England, which is essentially Henry VIII's divorce court, so it deserves whatever it gets, does it think that there is an enormous constituency for that worldview? Because they're just patently isn't, is there? I mean, I don't see anyone who walks past a church and sees a massive Black Lives Matter sign and goes, oh, that seems like a good church. I think they just go, really? Why? I don't want it. Don't want it in football. I don't want it in my place of worship.
Yeah.
Because football is worship in a way, isn't it?
It is. I don't think the Church of England thinks they're preaching to a particular person. I don't think Jaguar thinks they're preaching to a particular person. I think their demographic isn't who we suspect. It isn't the people with the blue hair who have pronouns in their bio already. It's the rest of us. They're trying to tell the rest of us that we need to become like them. We need to become their audience, right? They're trying to convert us, aren't they, really? This proselytizing.
Yeah, that makes sense. So they're trying to say to us, you're wrong, and therefore we need to lead you to the light of the TQIA pedo cult.
Yeah, they're trying to drag us into their new religion. Yeah, absolutely.
But that's not going to work, is it? Because that won't work with a Christian.
No, which is why the church is empty. Like, this is why the Church of England is dead. The new statistics came out recently. It's poor. And this is going to be his legacy, Welby's legacy, that he's killed the church, finished off the Church of England.
So why wouldn't you be a good archbishop then?
Because you have to be a left-wing politician to be part of that establishment. And it is an establishment role these days. It should be a counter-establishment. It should be, look, here's the gospel. Our job is to proclaim this to the people. You know, if the government say, we're going to close the churches or we're going to close non-essential services, the Archbishop of Canterbury should say, we are not a non-essential service. And in a time of need like this, we are here for the people. Like, you've got to go against the grain, and it rubs people up the wrong way.
Why do you go against the grain?
Because that's what we're called to do. We're called to fight for the truth, whether people like it or not. And quite often they don't. And so it's interesting, isn't it? Because people often get on our side with things, with issues, but not with the whole cause. And so later down the line, someone who's followed us for a particular thing that they happen to believe in, later down the line, when we say something that they don't believe in, they get all upset. It's like, oh, I'm very disappointed in you, or I can't believe you're right on everything else, but not on this. Like, people get really, really jarred by it. And they fail to see the purpose that we're here to proclaim the truth. We're here to follow the truth. Like, that's the whole point of the gospel, to live in Christ, to repent of sins and have faith in Christ. Like, follow the truth in all things, not just the things that make people happy. Like, we're not here to gain popularity. If people follow us or come along with us in this pursuit of truth, great. But once they rock up against a bit of truth they don't like, that's not our fault. That's on them. And so that's the hardest thing about all of this thing.
So do you think that you know, there's been I've been also noticing a back and forth between James Lindsay, Constant Kissin, and Carl Benjamin Sargon about so James Lindsay got some of the Communist Manifesto into a right-wing journal. So he's talking about the woke right, and then people are going, oh, there's no such thing as the woke right. And I really do think there is a woke right.
Yeah, I think you use it differently to him, though. You've used it for a long time, but I think you've used it entirely different to what he is trying to paint. You see things that are woke in both people on the left and on the right. And I think he's trying to paint this woke right as kind of, he's essentially saying we need to be old-fashioned liberals like me. Like, that's what he's saying, because he is a liberal.
Who's saying that?
James Lindsay. I like James Lindsay, but he's a liberal that hasn't gone all the way, right? So he said, whoa, dial back on the trans stuff, dial back on the mutilation, etc. We're liberal up until this point, and everyone else needs to be here. And so his attack of the woke right is just an attack of the right, essentially, because he says, oh, you're dogmatic about things. Yeah, we are dogmatic about things, like, because we believe in Christ. We believe in it. And he recognizes there is a need for a logos, but he doesn't admit who the logos is. So James Lindsay hasn't reached his full potential yet, but he's trying to be a purist on everyone else who has and drag them back to where he is. That's the way I see it.
Oh, I see it so differently. I think James Lindsay is a very, very committed Christian.
No, James Lindsay's not a Christian. I don't know why. You've said this before. He's a massive atheist.
I don't know that's true, Cal.
It is true. Like, famously, he is an atheist. Like, he's very much not a Christian.
But he talks about Christ all the time.
Yeah, this is my point.
But he doesn't believe in him.
No. Did you see
the Babylon Bee thing with Jordan Peterson, where it goes, God thinks that Jordan Peterson is the greatest metaphor for Christianity there ever was? But I thought that was quite funny.
I didn't see that one.
So my point is,
James Lindsay identifies, right, as an anti-communist. This is his whole thing. Like, he's like, we've got to be anti-communist. And, you know, some of the writers are quoting Marx. And I was like, no, first and foremost, when he did that with Helen Pluckrose, that was a great experiment when they first came out and they put, some Marxist stuff in. They put some nonsense in left-wing journals. It was published in academic journals and no one really picked up on it. That was a great coup. But this time he's published... It's not the Communist Manifesto. He's reworded it, and I've seen the comparisons side by side. It's pretty much all been reworded, and he's published it in an online blog, right? That's not the same as right-wing academia or academia in general. But his whole stance is, look, I'm anti-communist, and I don't think it's good enough to be anti-anything. Like, you can't center your foundation of your world or your perspective on being against something. So my message was, we all agree that Marxism is evil, communism is evil, but we have to be for something. So we have to be for good as well as against evil. It's not good enough to be against evil. We have to be for good. And this is why Christianity is like based, whereas anti-communism is lame, because we have to find the truth in all things, not just be against the opposite of the truth.
I agree. And also when you said that and I saw that, I thought I've got to upgrade my thinking pattern, because I have anti-communist as the in my Twitter profile, but it should say Christian.
Right. I didn't know that. And, but
Yeah, I just need to upgrade it or update it or whatever. But I think you're absolutely right. I've said this. I said it to Tice and Reform many times. Like, your super objective can't be to destroy the Conservative Party, because, you know, what are you actually going to do once you have destroyed the Conservative Party? On a quick Reform moment, because why not? Farage was on, what's it called, Question Time last night, and he was saying we now do need to deport people. I don't quite know where they stand on this sort of stuff. Rupert Lowe seems to be driving that ship or that car. What do you make of that?
I don't know. Rupert Lowe's doing great. He's doing okay. I don't really know where Reform falls at the moment. Did we talk last week about them potentially getting 100 million?
Yeah. I don't know. I spoke to Errol Musk, Elon's dad, on Monday.
Oh.
And I was speaking to him about it, and he was saying, I don't really rate them. I don't rate Farage. He says he's more of a dissembler than he is a leader. And, you know, I noticed a sort of Twitter algorithm switch as well, whereby I'm getting a lot more negative stuff or stuff that I disagree with in my timeline, which I'm actually really grateful for, because I think it's really nice to get someone else's perspective who thinks that something is really evil and really bad. But Errol's view was Reform are not the answer. And I've spoken to a lot of people who I rate, who I think are really smart people, who say, no, the person hasn't appeared yet. And then I saw this kid called Nicholas, what's his name? Nicholas. Lysak. And I was like, who is this guy sitting there slagging off Tommy Robinson, who, by the way, I have been in communication with this week, and is a brave man who has lived a life. I mean, he's struggling, isn't he? But he's there, and he's, you know, it's good to communicate with him. And Jordan, to be fair, whatever you think of Jordan Peterson is really like, hey, Lawrence, how can I get in touch with Tommy? I want to get in touch with him. What can I do to help? You know, really proactive in that. But this Nicholas Isaac guy turns around and goes, he's like 8, which is my primary issue with someone. You know, I love young people with you. She's like, just so we know, Reform's position is this and that. But Nicholas Lysak, whatever his name is, he was one of the people that shared the same story as Bernie Spofforth over the intention or not, but I would say intention proved, of the Southport Tacker. And he got a free pass from there. And Connor Tomlinson, who's as smart as they come, is, and you know, he's good mates with Ryan Hirsi Ali, really understands how Islam works, is completely like on a do not associate with. And this Nicholas Lysak person, who is like Isabel Oakeshott's intern, is telling people what the Reform position on everything is. I'm just like,
I'm not going to address him personally, because I think he's very young and it wouldn't be fair. But I will say about people like him, I know millions of them, there are dozens of them in Westminster, right? The young, ambitious, want to get into politics type, and they're just really smarmy, and they overcompensate for things, and they're not worth paying any attention to. Let them mature a bit, let them be around a bit and see how toxic and dark the whole thing is. Let them become jaded and cynical like the rest of us. But they're just tryhards. Bless them. They're really not worth worrying about.
I'm a bit worried because I'm going to a party on tomorrow, and they're all going to be there. All of them.
Why are you going to a party with the Westminster lot?
Because I am so rarely invited to these parties, and I'm not trigonometry of a party. I'm not invited to. I'm never invited.
Never been invited to the trigonometry party either. Even though I've done their show twice, that's always fascinating.
Yeah, so I just thought I'll go.
Yeah,
it's not trigonometry's party, but it will. I don't know. Anyway, but I think that's interesting. Don't address it. I want to now, I want to move on because we're now.
Baby names?
Yeah. Rock?
Baby names?
Yes. Fucking hell. So yeah, for the sake of everyone who doesn't know, Muhammad is now the most popular name in the UK. Now, Colin Brazier made a good point about this. He's also a good follow.
He is
Colin Brazier. He's a very, very thoughtful, articulate, erudite, and really brilliant. He's a wordsmith as well, which I'm
kind of the last of a generation of proper journalists.
Yeah, and he's a noble man as well, because he also GB News decided that he was a bit too like straight tied for them, so they replaced him. But he never slags them off or anything like you and I do. No. But he said Muhammad has been the most popular name in England for years. Yep. It's just spelling that is doing. So what does your Islamic theology extend to understanding the difference between Mohammed and Muhammad?
No, I just understood that there were different spellings because they're kind of mostly from illiterate tribes, right? So these things have been handed down through tradition rather than written down. Like the East, the Middle East in particular, wasn't as, say, civilized as the West. So they don't really have the written record of how these words are spelt. But yeah, I think he's absolutely right. Muhammad has been the most popular name in England for a long time. It's just been Muhammad, Mohammed, Mahmed, Ahmed, all these, yeah.
So is Ahmed as well from Islam? It's so, I mean, I know it's from Islam, but I'm saying, is it a derivation of Muhammad? Does that not say a lot about where we are as the United Kingdom?
I wasn't taking this one as a negative. I was taking this as a positive because all of the girls' names are still Western. Most of them are still English. Most of the boys' names are still English. Some of them are still Christian. Muhammad has taken the top spot, but he's surrounded by Anglo. So there's still hope there for him to be dragged back out.
Hang on a minute, mate. Sorry to pull you up on something.
Go on, because I've got Noah's number two, then Oliver, then George. Like Oliver and George, you cannot get more English than them. Leo, another English name. Arthur. I mean, properly Anglo.
Luca, number seven.
Yeah, that's a Western name. It's still a Western name. It's not English, but Western. Theodore, Oscar, and Henry, for goodness sake. So
yeah,
they're all Western, mostly English, quite a lot of them Christian. And the same for the girls. Yeah. Olivia, Amelia, Isla, Lily, Freya, Ava, Ivy. I feel like I'm reading the names of all your nieces here, Lawrence.
All right, calm down, dear.
but you see the point, though, right?
Why you're actually laughing with me? This is one of the first times you actually laugh with me rather than just going, oh, you idiot. tell me something. So Noah, that's like proper Christian, isn't it?
I love that.
Oliver.
It's a shame that Noah has been dragged down by Muhammad, but the rest of them can gang up on him and kick him back out, I think.
George, yes, fucking yeah. George, but he's a down. Leo, yeah, we know a Leo, we like a Leo. Arthur, yes. Luca, I mean, I'm a bit.
Let's not lie, but that's a new entry. Luca
is a new entry at seven. Is there a famous like member of like Strictly Come Dancing who's called Luca or something? What's having that? Theodore. Oscar, Henry, new entry. We're ready. We're ready for it. Oh, hang on. I've got a community note for it.
Oh, go on.
Community notes. The name Muhammad represents 1.5% of all boys born in 2023. So despite being the most popular, it represents a very small portion. Yeah, thanks a lot. According to the Office of National Statistics, there are approximately 307,000 male births with someone called Muhammad. Whoa! And you're trying to community note me on that.
Right. They're trying to add extra context to try and make it seem less harsh. But the fact of the matter, it's still the most popular name in the country, in England and Wales, and it shouldn't be.
Could someone be called Muhammad and be truly British?
No.
Why?
Because it's a fundamental aspect of the Mohammedan cult, the death cult. It's the name of the supposed founder of the death cult, the warmonger and paedophile himself. And so to name someone, it's like saying, can someone be called Satan and still be Christian? Like, you can convert, sure, but it's not a good start, is it? For someone to be called Muhammad shows that their family's values are counter-British, really.
They're religious ahead of being British. I've got another Fox and Follows. Fox and Follows. There's a woman who spoke to me for 90 minutes. I had a 90-minute seminar with her, and I cannot encourage you to listen to her more. She's called Elaine Ellinger, which is at Elaine, E-L-A-I-N-E, underscore, Ellinger, E-L-L-I-N-G-E-R. And she runs a small YouTube channel at the moment, but I imagine it's going to get very, very big, called Perspectives on Islam. And she talks about how Islam takes over and how it does so. And I find her absolutely fascinating. And I find her a real breath of fresh air in this world full of experts. You know, the experts that tell us that we must have COVID jabs, or the experts that tell us that we can't have log fires, or the experts that tell us this. But this is someone who's actually just really sat down and, look, I think she's Jewish, I would be my guess. I don't know. But she has sat and really broken down the rules of Islam. And I would encourage anyone to follow her and follow Perspectives on Islam, which I think is really good. Anyway, we're at Muhammad. We think that that's you were saying you're encouraged that it's
because I think Saint George, Arthur after King Arthur, Henry after King Henry are probably the most English names I can think of for boys, and they're still in the top 10. That's fantastic. Like, despite modernity, liberalism, multiculturalism, like the top 10 names are full of English names. That's great.
So your comfort comes from the fact that it's surrounded by... Yeah.
Muhammad is surrounded by Englishmen.
I like that, actually. That works for me. That really works for me. Okay, do you want to talk about Labour's plan for change, Keir Starmer's reboot? I mean, do we care? The guy's a fucking moron, isn't he?
He is, and I don't think the plan was very much of a plan. I think it's mostly just buzzwords and nonsense, but that's be expected from most politicians these days. Let's see what they actually manage to do. So far, they've only managed to make the country worse.
Who's writing his stuff? Because he's so weird. I watched the whole speech, and then half of it was quite right wing. He was I've had enough of back tunnels. We need to build.
Who was that? Said we need missiles. Call for missile defence. Labour MP Luke Ackerhurst has emphasised the need for Britain to develop its own Iron Dome. Like, yeah, let's develop an Iron Dome. Absolutely. Like, Trump wants one in America too. I think they're a great idea. They work well in Israel.
I just bought the... Because I'm going on holiday next week. As someone said, I go blind. I just bought... I think she's called Annie... Can't remember her surname. Let me just get it right. I just bought her book, which is called Nuclear War Scenario, Annie Jacobson.
Excuse me.
And I've got her book, and what's his face's book? What's his face? Exactly, Lord Sumption's book. And those are the two things I'm going to read while I'm away next week. So that's quite interesting. So Labour MP Luke Ackerhurst has emphasised the need for Britain to develop its own Iron Dome to defend against potential missile threats from Russia and Iran. Well, let's stop winding up Russia.
Yeah. Strong Gods, Return of the Strong Gods, Nationalism, Populism, and the Future of the West.
Back to Lindsay for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
And others. People are now saying that fascism... Yeah, and you know, the Hitler version of it was just Marxism but done properly. You know, when they say You know, and they say, yeah, we've never tried proper socialism. They say, no, we have. We did it with fascism. Do you think that's any truth in that?
I don't know about that. But the point Rina is making in Return of the Strong Gods is that the West has been so against fascism for so long, and rightly so, following the two world wars, that it hasn't been for anything, including defending what it knows to be good, true, and beautiful. And so we see fascism everywhere. And this is why people think, you know, Donald Trump's going to become a dictator and a fascist, like, because they see things about him that they don't like. And they think, well, Hitler also had those things, therefore he must be Hitler. Like, it's just an absurd lack of being able to move on from the post-war period, essentially. And, it's almost 100 years now. It's coming up to the point that we should be looking forward into how do we create the West or make the West even better. But we're still stuck in a defense mode against the results of what led up to World War II.
The right are very, very lazy when it comes to continuing the mission, which I think Trump is actually very good at, which is we're like, oh, he's won. Great. Woke is dead, you know. And it's like, no, it's not. It's going to come out. I found it hilarious that, what's his face? The Jamie Vardy, who like deliberately destroyed the rainbow corner flag, was like, no, I didn't mean to do it as a gesture of hatred of the progressive pride child mutilation cult. It was just an accident. And it's right. Like, no, we should stand up and we should do it. Oh, dude. Okay, what's I literally can't see, my eyes hurting so much. Wow. So I'm sorry. But
get that checked out.
Well, do I?
Like, what happened? What were you doing?
So I was going to post a picture of my own next amazing creation.
Right.
And it didn't turn out as well as I thought it was. I got very, very confident. I was like, I'm going to, because there's bits on my house that have asbestos in them. And I'm like, I'm just going to rip those down. Well, not rip the asbestos, take the asbestos off carefully and then dispose of it correctly, but rip down some bits that are outbuildings and stuff. And I'm like, I'll just build a new one. I'm like, how hard is bricklaying? And the response I got,
how hard is bricklaying?
the overwhelming response I got was, it's really easy for the first two rows of bricks, and then it gets really, really hard. So I was putting up this enclosure. You've seen, because I've got the problems with the dogs and the chickens. They're not great friends. And just before I came on here, I was catching chickens actually and throwing them into their new house that I built. And the chicken wire has got that sharp little bit on it, and I just walked past and just went, and it stabbed me in the eye. Oh. And it's really, really, really hurting.
How do you disinfect your eye?
Well, I don't know. I can't really see properly out that eye, which is not good.
You definitely need to get that looked at, because if it stabbed you anywhere else, you'd have to put alcohol in it and stuff and make sure it's clean for so you don't.
Well, like him, I'm happy to put alcohol in my eyes. I mean, I put LSD in my eyes. So, LSD.
In your eye?
Yeah.
Okay.
I had a pretty, pretty wild childhood, Calv. So talk us through the next week. Despite the fact that you've got a Christmas tree in on your right hand side, and it looks like you're all curled up with the little cold outside
there as well. I'm in Florida at a friend's house right now. I'm preaching down here, speaking down here in Florida. Then I'm back up to Michigan on Saturday, so I'll be back in time for Mass on Sunday. It's very snowy in Michigan, so it's nice to have a couple of days down here in Florida and get topped up on vitamin D. But it's next week I'm just up there. Oh no, I've got a men's retreat next week. Yeah.
How are you feeling a few months in now? Do you feeling like this was a really, are you feeling, you've seen to me as your chum, you seem just so different. Like you were so quiet when we were hanging out together and you were like, you do seem to have a new lease of life. Do you feel
this was great. It's a perfect fit. It makes sense. Like, I get why I was called here. Genuinely, in my person, I feel much happier here than I did in London. It just feels, places have a vibe, and London's dark, it's heavy, it's just miserable. It really is. And it's sad to see it that way, but I don't recognize the London that I moved to 20 years ago. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I went down there on the weekend, in the week, and I was just like, every time I go, it gets harder and harder and harder to be there. But our previous Fox and Father Follows, Chazza Gill, said quite poignantly, I thought, that we cannot give up on London. We cannot give up on the cities.
Because has any major city ever been recaptured?
Many have, yeah. I mean, you just need to read The End of Everything by Victor Davis Hanson. He talks about this stuff. He takes four, Thebes, Carthage, Tenochtitlan. I mean,
no, in modernity, because historically they have, but they were willing to fight, literally to fight, to take them back. These days, fighting is not even an option. That's not even on the cards. Like, the idea of a crusade these days, I call my show a common crusade, because that's the only kind of crusade that would ever be allowed now. The Pope would never order armies of Knights Templars. The King of England would never send knights to literally get Mohammedans out. We've passed that. We've conceded way too much ground.
Yeah, I have hope in the younger generation. Like I said to my son today, who has been poorly, so he came up with me and missed a bit of school, and I said, can you help me with this house now that I've half blinded myself? And he was like, yeah, sure. And he got out, and it was freezing cold, you know, and it's really like it stormy and rainy and horrible all last night. So it's like you're waving around in boots, you're trying to like attach things, and he just got on with it and did it. And I just thought, you're my hope. You're the future. So I feel really confident about that. So next week's Fox and Father, which we are going to do, which can it be a bit Christmassy?
It can be as adventy as you like. But just on that point, that is the way. And I put this out in a tweet this week. I go, this is the way that we win. This is the way we turn the tide. It's you get married, have lots of children, raise them in the faith. Those three steps, simple as. Get every Christian you know to get married, have children, raise them in the faith. And that's how we win back, because that's how they're defeating us, by numbers. But to the former point of, I don't think any city has been recaptured in modernity. I'd love to see it happen. I just don't know if there's a possibility of reclaiming London without force.
Yeah. I agree with your point about raising kids in the faith. All of the lessons I've learned from my marriage, my first marriage, are never, ever marry a non-Christian. Just don't do it. You're never going to get anywhere. It's going to end up as absolute hell. Marry someone who has a deep and profound faith, because they're gonna help you when you can't help yourself. So it's, you know, it one has to be grateful. We were talking about with Larry, I was talking about that stuff, but what you're thankful for, and I was saying I'm thankful for suffering, you know, in a lot of ways, because I think that it is got, you know, God's Welby says it. I mean, he doesn't get it right to say that, you know, God laughs while man makes plans, but it is good to try and think about your future, and think about your future in very modest but enormous terms, which is like the fact that the role that faith is going to play in your life, and if you don't engage with that on a serious level, then you're pretty much dust in the wind. I would say there's no substance to you at all.
I do think it's hilarious that Welby stumbled through that old cliche. Like, part of his job is public speaking, for goodness sake.
I know. And he does this hand-waving crap. It's all about him. Yeah. And I'm so bored of people. Like, I think to myself, I could complain about a lot. Like, I really could. There's a lot I could complain about. My entire career was taken away from me. You know, I could sit there and complain all day, but I don't. I refuse to do so, because I just don't. I find victimhood ugly, actually. I think it's an ugly quality. Yeah. Well, listen, my friend, I love you. We've managed to. I don't think we ended up like going, we can't cope anymore. It's the end of the world. So we got through.
This is an exciting time of year.
Yeah.
Where are you going to be, by the way?
I'm going to be at my sister's. And it's going to be great, and I am really looking forward to it. And we have a sort of good system where I mean, I worked out the best system is just to go to the cash point before you go to Christmas and just give everyone cash. Not no. your family, or obviously. No, the kids.
No.
I give them cash. That. I do. That's what I did. I just go, here's some cash.
That's and
I give
so them some lazy. Cash.
I know. I love it. Like, I'm thrilled.
You've thought about them. You've prepared in advance. Even if you don't wrap it yourself. I have.
I went to cash point. I thought about it.
That's such a man thing to do, isn't it?
I'll wait for your... What's your Christmas present to me? Where's mine?
I only buy for my nieces and my sister.
Oh, here we go.
I've just been to Disney World, the biggest Disney store in the world. I've chosen my niece's Christmas presents and my sister's Christmas present. They're going to love it. And I've got my mother something as well. They're all going to love it.
Good. And I'm so looking forward to you seeing them. And... It will be good. Oh, quickly, a small public but also private wedding point. When you said that I should get my marriage annulled so you can actually marry us, what does that mean?
Okay, let's talk about this on air. So the Christian teaching is that if you are married and divorced and your spouse is still living, then you are still under the eyes of God, one union, because two becomes one, let no man put asunder, it's indissoluble union. So if you get remarried while you have a living spouse, that is adultery. You make an adulterer of your new husband or wife.
Yeah, I've already been made in the... I got adulterated.
The only way you can get remarried as a Christian is if your first marriage was annulled. And it can only be annulled if if there is some reason that it wouldn't have been recognized as a marriage. For example, if the other person was never committed, or, you know.
She was married before. This is a slam dunk.
But the church has the authority, because what is loosed on earth may be loosed in heaven. What is retained on earth is retained in heaven. So the church has the authority to annul a previous marriage. And if that happens, then you can get married properly.
Annul it?
I can't annul it, but a bishop can annul it. You should speak to a bishop and find out if it's possible.
And on that one,
there are many reasons I think your first marriage potentially could have been annulled.
And on that bombshell, I love you, man. I'm so happy you're in Florida, and I will speak to you next week. I will be away myself, and I'm looking forward to like going and being somewhere with Lizzie. I'm excited about it. Nice. So, yeah.
What are the kids like when you're away?
Yeah, they're at their mum's. So, yeah, it's their mum's week. So, Eugene's with me now. Yeah, he's been really helpful. I will, yeah. He's an amazing, amazing, amazing young man. I adore him. Oh, fuck. I literally can't see. I'm in absolute agony.
All right.
I love you. This has been Fox and Father with myself, Calvin Robinson, and Lawrence Fox. With myself, Calvin Robinson, and Lawrence Fox.
Am I Lawrence Fox now? Goodness me.
Let's hope not, mate. I mean, just fingers crossed. Well, I'm going to go, what time is it? I'm going to go to the, it's 6 o'clock in the UK. I'm going to the pub. Woohoo! Friday night. All right.
Have a good night.
Love you, bro.
You too. Take care.